I'm Dick Gordon. This is The Connection. Throughout American history, there are some political archetypes that endure. The Yellow Dog Democrat, the Main Street Republican, and that storied and patrician character, the Massachusetts Liberal.
For no man about to enter high office in this country can ever be unmindful of the contributions which this state has made to our national greatness. Its leaders have shaped our destiny long before the great republic was born. Its principles have guided our footsteps in times of crisis as well as in times of calm. Its democratic institutions, including this historic body, have served as beacon lights for other nations as well as for our sister states. For what Pericles said of the Athenians has long been true of this commonwealth. We do not imitate, for we are a model to others.
Though President Kennedy described Massachusetts as a model for others, his brother Ted Kennedy failed to make a persuasive case for his own candidacy two decades later.
For me, a few hours ago, this campaign came to an end. For all those whose cares have been our concern, the work goes on, the cause endures, the hope still lives, and the dream shall never die.
But in 1988, the presidential dream of another Massachusetts liberal did die when Governor Michael Dukakis fell to George Bush Sr. Now, as John Kerry closes in on the Democratic nomination, one has to wonder. Is the Massachusetts liberal an endangered political species? Has the Massachusetts legacy become a liability in presidential politics? Our number's 1-800-423-8255, 1-800-423-TALK. My guests this hour are David Nyan, political analyst and syndicated columnist, and Jack Farrell, Washington bureau chief and columnist for the Denver Post, both men perhaps best known for their writing under the masthead of the Boston Globe. David, it's nice to have you here.
Thank you.
And Jack, nice to have you with us.
It's good to be here. Hi, David.
Hello, Jack. How are you, old pal?
I'm doing well.
I want to ask you guys if you saw the line in the weekend paper from the head of Americans for Tax Reform, Grover Norquist. I'll quote one piece of it here. He said, when you stand up and say, here's a Massachusetts liberal whose voting record is nearly identical to Ted Kennedy's, you just lost 45% of the electorate, and that's just the starting point. And that's what we're talking about this hour, the sort of idea of the Massachusetts liberal. David, is it myth? Is it true? What is it?
I saw a figure over the weekend, Dick, that 21% of respondents in a national poll said that the fact that Kerry's from Massachusetts would make them less likely to vote for him. I should point out that Grover Norquist, a Massachusetts native, I believe. Am I right, Jack?
Yes, I think he's from Newton.
And Grover has made a living out of being the chief spider in the spider hole of the vast right-wing conspiracy. He runs a meeting in Washington every Wednesday morning in which all the right-wingers, the religious fundamentalists, you know, the American Mujahideen, I call them, the anti-tax people, the corporate lobbyists, the polluters, they get together and they play their cards and they come out with the message of the day, which they then spread through Fox Network and the Wall Street Journal editorial page. So what we're looking at, Dick, is 8.5 months of savage politicking. And if John Kennedy could talk about Pericles and the Athenians, my advice to Kerry is put on your lead jockstrap and get ready to be a Spartan, not an Athenian. Jack, you go along with that?
I think that, like all stereotypes, the one in Massachusetts is exaggerated. Granted, it's because there was a third-party candidate running, but Massachusetts voted for Ronald Reagan twice. We now have, or you now have, a Republican governor, a third Republican governor. It's going to be 16 years or is it going to be 20 years when he's finished out of office? So that's almost two decades of a Republican governor in the state house in Boston. So,
but Jack, it's got to mean something, the idea of the Massachusetts liberal. It does have some resonance in the country. What's the code? What is it code for?
Well, I think it's code for a sort of a sneering, we know better, let me have another glass of Chardonnay and all those poor yahoos, and did you see what was on HBO last night, as opposed to pass the fried chicken, we're going to the church social on Sunday, which may be the prevailing cultural icon for the rest of the country.
Dick, Jack knows this. George Bush Sr., George H.W., was born 7 miles from where we're sitting. He was educated here. His kids are educated here largely. The current Bush is a preppy, you know, Andover, Yale, Harvard Business School. This faux cowboy act. I call him the rhinestone cowboy. In East Texas, they call a guy like Bush who pretends to be a cowboy a goat roper. You know, he don't rope real steers.
But you've been in politics long enough to know that the facts don't really matter. It's whatever kind of myth you can create.
I think Michael Dukakis showed us how not to handle that when he was savage for letting Willie Horton loose and not, you know, beating the brains out of his wife's putative attacker in response to that famous debate question. The resentment against Massachusetts in the Northeast has populist roots that goes back to the Civil War and before. Massachusetts was the seat of the abolition movement. It was John F. Kennedy who opened the door for the civil rights laws, which have doomed Democratic presidential candidates ever since. I mean, it's been 40 years of unrelenting revenge by white male Southerners against the liberals for forcing on them civil rights laws that they now pretend to embrace, but which in fact gave rise to Nixon's Southern strategy and made it possible for every Republican candidate ever since to carry the white male Southern vote by 2 and 3 to 1.
So, Jack Farrell, Dukakis, what does it mean? What's the importance of the Republican strategist? Because Karl Rove was, operating under the tutorship of Lee Atwater at that time. What does it mean for this campaign? They're going to try it again, it seems.
Well, it's a very easy target, and easy targets sometimes work out well, and sometimes they don't, and they surprise everybody. I remember when I started out covering politics, California was thought to be Republican, part of the Republican lock on the Electoral College. And in my short lifespan watching politics, it has gone from being the surest thing that Republicans had to one of the hardest states that they can carry. So the idea that we can go out, we can beat Kerry up because he's a Massachusetts liberal sounds good for the guys who did it in 1988 with Dukakis, but it may be more difficult this year if people are looking past that, looking for different issues, and they may dismiss it as a superficial argument if it's made too often and too stridently.
It's interesting, though, because we know that it already has some weight in the campaign. John Kerry on Saturday night was speaking at the Virginia Jefferson Jackson dinner and spoke directly to this accusation.
I have news this time for George Bush and Karl Rove and Ed Gillespie and the rest of their friends. I am not going to back down. I am one Democrat who knows how to fight back, and I've only just begun to fight.
David Nyhan, what he's saying is that he's also very mindful of what happened to Michael Dukakis in 1988. Dukakis came into that campaign with a brilliant resume, the Massachusetts miracle. He should have been able to turn that around. He never got to talk about anything that he wanted to talk about. He ended up spending the entire campaign, or the latter part of the most damaging part of the campaign, answering all these charges from the Republicans. It all came down to Massachusetts liberal.
Dukakis allowed himself to be a gut shot early on. They defined him early. Lee Atwater ran some focus groups, and they decided to portray Dukakis as anti-patriotic, anti-American flag. I mean, Bush campaigned in flag factories. How dumb is that? Now, it worked. And Dukakis was a feckless guy who didn't fight back and will tell you today this was the basic mistake that he made. Clinton went to school on that and learned to set up his war room and fought back as bitterly as he was attacked. And that's the way you have to do it with this crowd. I think Kerry anticipating this, I think this is one reason that Kerry broke with Ted Kennedy and voted to authorize the war in Iraq before the war broke up, for which he took so much heat from the Dean supporters. But you had to insulate yourself, inoculate yourself against the anticipated charge that you were another wimp Massachusetts commie simp liberal.
But if you were,
and
if
I think
you were...
this is also why Kerry has come out against gay marriage, because of the Massachusetts Supreme Judicial Court ruling, he has to position himself in a place where he can win moderate and conservative voters in the South and the Midwest.
Jack Farrell, go ahead, Jack.
I also think it's a reason why the Democrats begin the debate against Bush by talking about his military record and the time that he did or did not spend with the Air National Guard in Alabama. Mm-hmm. They're showing right from the start, we're not going to be patsies like Dukakis. We're going to be in a war room mentality. In fact, we're going to launch the first few salvos. And, you know, I'm waiting to see the records, but at this point, you know, talking about him being a deserter, talking about him being AWOL, of course, they're not doing it, but their surrogates are doing it, is as tough as almost anything I saw the Republicans throw at Dukakis in 1988.
But, Jack, I need you to help me with something. When Teddy Kennedy stands beside John Kerry on a stage in Massachusetts, there is that attachment to the family, to the story of the Kennedys. But is Ted Kennedy as valuable to the Kerry campaign in a state like Michigan where he was campaigning with him? Will he continue to be at that man's shoulder as the campaign continues?
Well, it's the difference between the primaries and the general election. If you're in the primaries and you're trying to win the union vote in Michigan, Ted Kennedy is a great guy to have at your side. When you go into the general election, he's probably still a good guy to have working those union halls, but maybe not, unquote, so high a profile as he is during a primary season.
And more specifically, Dick, I would say targeted to minorities, Hispanics, blacks, and the elderly. And to the elderly, he's sort of God on Medicare and Medicaid. So I agree with Jack. You use Kennedy in the general election in a different fashion than Kerry used him to great effect in Iowa and New Hampshire.
Are we saying, though, Jack, that the Massachusetts liberal mud just won't stick? Or are you saying that if Bush stands on a stage in Florida at some point 4 or 5 months from now and starts talking about this man from Beacon Hill in Boston, born with a silver spoon, or whatever he wants to say about him? And again, I'm not talking about fact. I'm talking about what the political message will be. Will it work?
Yeah, well, I mean, I think you can write off huge chunks of the South. There's not any Democrat that's going to beat George Bush in Mississippi and Alabama, barring a total economic collapse in 2004. If you go around to the fringes of the South, well, you could probably make an argument that, say, John Edwards might do a little bit better. But, you know, none of the Democrats running are doing what Clinton did in 1992, which is go right out to the people and say, I'm a different kind of Democrat. Now, Kerry is sort of doing that by saying, I'm a veteran. I fought in Vietnam. Mm-hmm. And that's sort of his way of saying, I share your values. You know, I go hunting. I'm a sportsman. I like to fly helicopters. So all those things are sort of tips of the hat towards that cultural gulf that exists. But you know, there's just a big chunk of the country that doesn't like the values that they see Massachusetts liberals having. And they also know that Massachusetts liberals and Berkeley liberals and west side of Los Angeles liberals and Manhattan liberals sneer and look down at them all the time and call them yahoos. And they don't particularly like that. And that, you know, one thing that Kerry has to be careful of is that he doesn't get too many people talking about the Southerners being those guys driving pickup trucks with Confederate flags, or he's going to start the cultural war himself.
Dick, if Kerry, we assume Kerry's the nominee. I assume he's the nominee. If he fails to carry any southern state like Gore, then he has to win 70% of the remaining electoral votes. Now, Gore lost the election last time. I mean, he won Florida, but Anton Scalia bagged it for his hunting partner, Dick Cheney. Okay, leave Florida aside. Gore lost New Hampshire by 7,200 votes. I think Kerry can win New Hampshire against this guy, but he still needs a southern state, and maybe Jack would agree, West Virginia or Arkansas or Florida are potential southern states for Democrats.
Question is, Connection listeners, will John Kerry talk about himself as a Massachusetts liberal? Can that be something that works to his advantage, or does he have to run away from that label if that's what the Republicans intend to use, assuming he becomes the Democratic candidate? Our number is 1-800-423-8255, 1-800-423-TALK. I'm Dick Gordon. This is The Connection from NPR.
Support for NPR.
Dick Gordon, you're listening to The Connection from National Public Radio, broadcasting from Boston, capital of Massachusetts, home of the Massachusetts Liberal, 1-800-423-8255. We know there are a number of people who are from this state who have moved elsewhere and a number of people who live outside Massachusetts and look at this state with different ideas about whether or not the term Massachusetts liberal actually has any kind of political meaning. What does it mean to you? Our number is 1-800-423-TALK. We'd like to have you join us. David Nyan is here with me in the studio. He's a political political analyst and a syndicated columnist for the Eagle Tribune of Lawrence, the Newburyport Daily News, the Salem News, and the Gloucester Times, former columnist and associate editor with the Boston Globe. Jack Farrell's with us. He's now Washington bureau chief and columnist with the Denver Post, but worked as a reporter and White House reporter with the Boston Globe right up until almost this time last year.
Author of a great book on Tip O'Neill.
Tip O'Neill and the Democratic Century.
Thank you, David.
And David's book, incidentally, is about the Dukakis story. Duke, the inside story of a political phenomenon. Time to go and see what people think of our idea today. To Raleigh, North Carolina, Teresa. Hi there. Teresa, are you with me?
Yes, hello.
Hi. What do you think about this idea, Massachusetts liberal? Does it have any meaning?
Yes, I really would dearly love. I love the work of both your guests. If they could please address taxes and crime in light of Massachusetts values, I think that's going to be very important, particularly spending, because we've got, we've got a Bush who's...
Hang on a second here now, Teresa. Were you born in North Carolina?
Actually, my name is Heidi. I'm not sure what happened at the prior...
For the purposes of this program now, you will be known as Heidi.
And I'm not from North Carolina. I'm sorry. Maybe you can catch her again.
Where are you calling from, Heidi?
I'm on a car phone in the Metro West suburbs. I live in Somerville.
Okay, so you are native. And this idea of the Massachusetts liberal, do you think it has any kind of weight, any kind of power?
Well, I'm intrigued to hear all the stuff about cultural stuff. I didn't realize that it was that strong in the two commentators' minds. I thought it was more of a spending and crime thing. If they could please address that.
Tax and spend, soft on crime.
Well, Kerry's position in the campaign is that he would repeal the Bush tax cuts for people earning more than $200,000, which would give him some cover with the middle class. On crime, Kerry has an interesting record. In the Senate, he led investigations into the Iran-Contra scandal and the BCCI bank scandal. Mm-hmm. He was chairman of the Subcommittee on Narcotics and Terrorism and knows a lot about Central America and was Oliver North's worst nightmare. But as a prosecutor here in Middlesex County in Massachusetts, he ran the office, the district attorney's office, really, for a number of years. I think he prosecuted 20 or 30 murder cases. He told me once he never lost a murder case, capital crime, and he was a bit of a crime-busting young guy before he was elected lieutenant governor. So I think voters nationally who have not yet filled in their picture of Kerry are going to be served up a Kerry who is sort of in the mushy middle on taxes and spending, but was an aggressive prosecutor as a DA.
Okay, but,
yeah,
but
if you go back to the 96 debates with Weld, Kerry had a very good answer when he was pressed about the death penalty, which he has opposed throughout his career and which will no doubt be used by the Republicans to show how his values are not shared by most Americans. But his answer in that debate was, I've actually killed people, and I didn't particularly like it. And I think we have to be very careful when the state decides that it's going to kill people. So, I mean, that Vietnam service and those the Silver Star and the Bronze Star for Valor gives him an awful lot of cover that Dukakis didn't have. The biggest problem I think that Kerry's going to have is breaking out of the mindset of Massachusetts. If they,
what do you mean by that? Breaking
that,
out of the mindset of Massachusetts.
We talked about the flag factory. David brought up the flag factory, and I can remember that when the Republicans were making the charges about Michael Dukakis and the American Civil Liberties Union and the Pledge of Allegiance and the flag factory, that the Dukakis high command was saying, "Oh, really? I mean, they think we're going to get down in the gutter and fight with them on this." And meanwhile, those symbols were very potent and were turning huge swaths of Americans against the Democrats. Ticket.
In a street fight. So, I'm sorry, Jack. But
yeah, so Kerry has to watch that he doesn't slip into that same sort of arrogance.
In a street fight, the gutter is where you win it.
Is it arrogance, though, to choose not to get into the gutter? Once it's there, though, David, is that what you're saying? You've got to get
Dukakis
everything dirty?
Dukakis was conditioned by his success in Massachusetts, where once you won the Democratic primary, you just coasted to election by appealing to the better instincts of the voters. That's because the Republican Party here was a toothless old nag that couldn't do anything. The Republican Party nationally that Dukakis ran into was run by Lee Atwater, with George W. Bush sitting in Atwater's office with his cowboy boots up on the desk, by the way, and learning that negative politics worked. Dukakis was unprepared. He was disarmed. This is why I go back to Kennedy's speech in your intro about Pericles in Athens. Forget Athens. It's time for Sparta. Okay, you need armor, you need knives, and you need to bite the other guy in the neck as often as you can. So this is why you're going to hear a lot about Bush, who cast himself as the war president. I heard Cokie Roberts say he used the word war in his Russert interview 33 times. Was he a war avoider, or is he the war president? Was he AWOL, or did he do the duty in Alabama that he claims he did? That will be an issue for the next 8.5 months.
1-800-423-8255. Let's go to Charleston, South Carolina. And Janice, is that you there on the phone?
Yes.
Good. It's nice of you to call. What do you think?
I saw John Kerry in Columbia a couple of weeks ago meeting with the veterans, and I think if the press would cover him really as he is and not just sound bites, I think people will get a very good impression of him. You know, here in the South, these labels don't mean a lot. I mean, if you look at George Bush, he's the biggest deficit buster that we've had in ages. He's not a conservative Republican. In fact, conservative Republicans are extremely critical of his extreme spending while he's giving huge tax cuts and unbalancing the budget. And, in fact, Fritz Holling here pointed out that many years ago, Kerry was one of the first Democrats to sign in on the law that Fritz had passed on keeping the deficits down.
But help me with something here, though, Janice. Once it gets really fast-moving and dirty in a general election campaign, if President Bush comes to Charleston and says...
He did. He last came last
No,
week.
But I mean, if he starts to say, you know, the guy's a Massachusetts liberal, you don't want a Massachusetts liberal running your country, you want me. Are people going to hear that?
Not if the press doesn't keep playing this as a horse race and doesn't let the actual candidates speak for themselves.
Well,
there's too much commentary and not enough chance for candidates to actually push their issues, and I think that's what really needs to happen, and it's the press's fault.
Is it a war of the soundbite then, David?
Well, the press actually helped Kerry in the latter stages of his recovery against Dean, and Kerry didn't do it with good press. He did it, and then the good press followed. My own feeling is that candidates make their own luck with the media, and the media generally was highly critical of Ronald Reagan before he became president, of Clinton before he became president, and even of this current Bush. He was treated very tough in the media. And the media can't break you. If you are a solid candidate, you have good organization, if you have money, the media cannot defeat you. Now, I think what your caller, Dick, is getting at is that Kerry, we saw a different Kerry when he was surrounded by veterans on the stump. I saw a lot of the veterans in New Hampshire and his Swift Boat comrades and this fellow whose life he saved coming forward after 35 years, a Republican apparently. This is a very compelling story. And the best suit of armor that Kerry has against the Massachusetts liberal taint, and I think it is a taint in a lot of sections of the country, is that he not only fought in Vietnam, he did two tours, he got a bunch of medals, and he has actually killed enemy soldiers in defense of America and his troops. And that is an argument that for the Republicans is basically irrefutable. If I were them, I would go after him on cultural issues, you know, gay civil unions, mm-hmm. gay marriage,
abortion,
the fact that the Catholic Church, I think, is going to enter into this election on behalf of the Republican cause and on the grounds of abortion and gay marriage. Even though Kerry's a Catholic, I think he's going to have problems with the Catholic hierarchy.
And Jack?
I think that having spent time with Kerry, and David, I know you have as well, is that he does have a problem of showing a human side that it takes some time to get past. And one of the things that the veterans give him, and that probably the lady from South Carolina saw, was that they get him past that point much faster than anything else I've ever seen. They really bring him back to the small-d democracy of a small boat in combat and bring out that side of him that is much more appealing than the Yale, St. Paul's, Teresa Hines, House on Nantucket side. So I think that she's right that if American people get to see him in that kind of setting that she saw him in, they'll like him whether or not he can reproduce that over and over again for 8.5 months is another question.
But it seems to me, Jack, what you're saying is that the elements that make up the taint that David referred to of the Massachusetts liberal, these may largely be off the table. If the idea of a tax and spend Democrat or the idea of a patrician growing up in the mansions of the East Coast, these aren't elements of the campaign. If it becomes who is or would be a better war president, then what we're talking about might not actually end up being a particularly significant part of this fight.
Well, and also, I think the big weakness that Kerry has right now is when you look at Edwards and you look at Kerry, you know, you think about Edwards, you think, well, what's he talking about? Well, he's talking about the difference between tax breaks that favor capital versus tax breaks that favor the working guy. Mm-hmm. And you think about Kerry, and what you think about is, I can beat George Bush. And after a while, I can beat George Bush. It has to be put aside, tucked away, and something else has to come out to tell the country, you know, I can be a wartime president who also gives you jobs and health care and cares about the little guy. And that I think, is going to be the biggest challenge for Kerry is to keep the Vietnam, keep the armor that he's built up against the Massachusetts liberal claim while still presenting some sort of vision, some sort of positive reason why the country should turn now to the Democratic Party and say, all right, you run this for the next 4 years.
You're listening to The Connection from National Public Radio. Our number is 1-800-423-8255. Next to Louisville, Kentucky, Michael's joining us. Michael, thanks for calling.
Hello, thanks for having me.
So what do you think?
My comment is just based on one of your guest commentators that said that one of the reasons the Democrats have been having such a problem in the South recently is based on how the party voted 40 years ago on racial issues. And I think this just kind of illustrates that in many ways the Democratic Party is out of touch nationally, and especially in the South, not only in that the average voter doesn't really care about how the party voted on racial issues in the 60s, but it kind of shows that many in the Democratic leadership still condescend to the South, consider that it's basically a bunch of racists who vote on racial issues and really disagree with the racial progress that was made in the 60s. And it kind of shows that the real issues that people care about in the South are kind of being swept under the rug and acted like they're not, that they're not really important to the nation as a whole.
Michael, give me an example of the sort of thing that you think the Democrats are missing in the South, if the stereotype is as you describe it. Where are the Democrats off base here?
Well, I think that the South is largely more rural than the North, and that people generally want smaller government, less spending. And there are a lot of very sensible people who aren't necessarily rich who really do agree with tax cuts. I, for one, don't consider myself rich. I work very hard, and, I'm kind of tired of seeing 50% of my income go to the government and the majority of it, being, in my opinion, wasted.
So when the president says Massachusetts liberal, it's a term that has some meaning to you?
It does, actually, because my father's from Andover, Mass., and I've actually lived in New England for a few years. And I think that people who know about how the government works in that area of the country are aware that the government plays a much, much bigger role in people's lives in that area of the country than it generally plays in people's lives in the South. And I don't think people...
I want to bring Jack Farrell in here now, if I can, Michael, because, Jack, I know that in some of your thinking in preparation for this program, you were making not a similar charge, but one that was close, and that is that if there's a reason to blame Massachusetts liberals, it's that, in some cases, they are a little bit stuck on stereotypes of what the rest of the country represents. Is that a reasonable...
Absolutely. I mean, if you go to Massachusetts, and I've worked for a very long time, more than 10 years at the Boston Globe, and I will guarantee you that there's maybe one columnist at the Boston Globe who would be in support of the bill banning partial birth abortions, and everybody else would be against it. And not only would they be against it, it would be like they wouldn't even think about it. It would just be an automatic, almost knee-jerk reflex. This is a threat to the woman's right to choose. This is something that's coming out of those yahoos in the right wing and the conservative Christian movement. And we're just not going to listen to it. But if you go out to someplace like, and forget the South, I mean, let's go out to the West. Let's go out to Utah, to Nebraska, the Midwest, and just talk to people in their homes at a University of Nebraska football game in Lincoln and ask them about partial birth abortion. They say, oh, you know, well, I wouldn't want to see, you know, us go back to the days of the back alleys, that's for sure. But on the other hand, you know, this troubles me what I've heard about it. And I don't think that Massachusetts liberals, particularly in the salons of Cambridge, as David said, and in the halls of the Globe, appreciate that well enough.
Well, I would point out that Mitt Romney, a conservative, fiscally conservative Mormon, got elected governor and defeated Massachusetts' mainstream Democratic woman who supported third-term abortion or partial abortion, partial birth abortion. And the voters of Massachusetts rejected a Democrat who espoused, you know, a total abortion platform. But I want to go back to the caller from Louisville who has roots in Andover and thinks that it was I who made the point about the racial tensions in the South, and I think resentment going back to the Civil War and before, when there were cultural factors involved and economic factors. Massachusetts bankers, Massachusetts railroad men exploited the South, charged them higher rates, freight rates, what you could get for cotton, things like that. The Civil War is still alive. The Confederate flag issue in the South is all about the Civil War. That's not something made up by a Northern liberal, I would tell your caller. And look at the voting patterns. I mean, Southern white males vote Republican consistently. They elect conservative former Democrats turned Republican like Jesse Helms and like Strom Thurmond, who run racially divisive television spots. Affirmative action has become a code word. Look at how blacks vote in the South and how whites vote in the South. And I think the evidence is irrefutable.
So Michael's making the claim that Democrats are out of touch with Southern issues. You're saying specifically what to Michael?
I think Michael is right. I think a national Democrat has great difficulty winning in the South. We did have people like Clinton and Gore to a certain extent, Jimmy Carter, who were able to connect with Southerners and to bridge that divide. My own theory is that Kerry would have a harder time doing that because he is not of the South. He does not have the accent that goes down so well. That's why I think he'll pick a running mate like an Edwards or possibly a Graham of Florida, maybe Dick Gephardt. But I think that Kerry only has to win one or two Southern states, and I think he's got a shot, as I mentioned, West Virginia, Arkansas, which defeated a Republican incumbent senator, Florida because of the changing demographics of that state.
1-800-423-8255. Connection Listeners is that creature, the Massachusetts liberal, an endangered political species? Is it a legacy? Is it a liability? Or does it even factor in this campaign when you listen to it being bandied around? Our number is 1-800-423-8255. I'm Dick Gordon. This is The Connection from NPR.
Support for National.
I'm Dick Gordon. You're listening to The Connection from National Public Radio. Our number is 1-800-423-8255. We're trying to make some sense of the use of that political term, the Massachusetts liberal, on this program. Jack Farrell's with us. He's Washington Bureau Chief and columnist with the Denver Post. David Nyan is a political analyst and a syndicated columnist. He's here with me in Boston. We're going next to Northampton, Massachusetts. Casey's on the line. Casey, what do you think?
Well, I just wanted to say I grew up in Texas. This is my fourth winter in Northampton, Mass., which is supposedly more liberal even than Boston. And I just wanted to say that I don't think that people in the Northeast recognize that people in the South are not going to vote for somebody from Massachusetts. I really feel that. And why I feel that is that there really is the stigma associated with somebody from the Northeast, someone like Kerry. If they think of Ted Kennedy and people like that, and they won't vote for him. But that's why I think the Democratic Party is shooting itself in the foot by putting a Northeastern candidate up. And I think
you're saying nobody from the Northeast U.S. can ever be president of the United States?
Well, no, I'm not necessarily saying that. I'm just saying that Kerry is probably not the best choice. I think it would be better to go with somebody like Wes Clark, who espouses many of the ideas that Kerry does, but at the same time is from Arkansas and can swing those southern voters.
Is it all about geography, though, Casey?
I really do think it is, because I think, because I grew up in Texas, I think that there is a very different way of looking at the world in the South than there is in the North. I think that there's a fundamental way of doing things differently. Say, for instance, up here, many people don't call themselves Christians. However, they seem to espouse many of the ideals the Christians supposedly, you know, work towards, helping one's fellow man, supporting the poor, so on and so forth. But in the South, they call themselves Christians and believe in Christianity and Jesus Christ and things like that, but then they don't want to help their fellow man, and they're all into what's in it for me.
It's getting a little complicated for me here, Casey, but I like the 2 points that you raised. I want to hear both David and Jack on that. Jack, maybe I can start with you. I mean, geography, it helped Clinton to be from Little Rock. It helped Carter to be from Plains, Georgia. Does that mean it's really going to hurt Kerry to call Beacon Hill home?
Well, yeah, I mean, he's got to change it from D. Massachusetts to D. Vietnam, and I think that's what he's trying to do over and over again, is just say, I'm the military candidate. I'm just like Wes Clark. I share your values. I go hunting. I fly helicopters. And you'll see more and more and more of that. And you know, the philosophy is that Vietnam will be the great shield against the geographic problem.
I told Kerry 2 years ago, I sat next to him at a dinner, and I said, John, to win New Hampshire in the presidential race, here's what you do. You get yourself on the cover of Field & Stream magazine wearing your camouflage hunting outfit, and in one hand holding a smoking .30-06, and in the other hand propping up a 26-point buck bleeding from the neck. You want to be the redneck candidate for guns in New Hampshire. Now, he didn't do that, but he can portray a sort of an aggressive macho image, which will help him some in the South. But I think your caller from Northampton is correct. There are a lot of cultural differences. People in the South don't warm up to a northern liberal. No senator has been elected since Kennedy 44 years ago to be president, and no northerner has been popularly elected since Kennedy. So it's in an attempt to break new ground that Kerry has to, as I keep coming back to my electoral map, and I think, you know, 8 months, if I'm back here sitting across this desk, you and I will be playing hopscotch with different states, and I'll be talking about Ohio as the most important piece on the board, and maybe Jack has a favorite candidate, maybe Missouri, maybe West Virginia, but I think Kerry will lose in large sections of the South, but I think a combination of the economy and his military record may give him a shot in one or two or three southern states where he has a chance.
Quick word on religion, though, because Casey makes the point that and I heard
I thought that was pretty unfair, actually. Sorry, Casey, but I know a lot of Southerners. I went to college in the South, and I don't believe that it's lip service that you go to church on Sunday and say you believe in Jesus and then you don't care about your fellow man. I think the way they care about their fellow man is different from believing that the federal government is the only person who can do these things. And I think that churches and groups are very important in the South, and they do an awful lot for poor people, sick people.
Yeah, I wasn't actually buying into what Casey was saying as much as to make the observation that I heard General Clark on the radio this morning quoting scripture and wondering, you know, whether or not the way that these Democratic candidates present themselves, and again, we're not talking here about the general election, but just among themselves, whether or not this is going to make a big difference.
Well, I think you can't be a phony like, you know, Howard Dean had that horrible moment where he misidentified a verse from a book from the Old Testament and said it was in the New Testament, and then had to come back and say, "I really am religious. I believe in God." It, you know, it's just sort of a northeastern reticence I have. That's a legitimate answer. I think what people in the South would suspect would be if all of a sudden, out of nowhere, you all of a sudden start dropping God in every third paragraph of your speech. I think it's much better to go down the South and say, "Look, you know, we have different traditions up north about how we worship, and it doesn't quite include all the cultural things that you do when you worship. But you know, this is America. You know, we can respect each other's differences."
Well, what the caller said resonated with me because surveys have shown that people who go to church more than once a week, and Southerners do that in a greater proportion than Northerners, vote Republican. And people who don't go to church at all or go very rarely tend to vote Democrat. So you've got the religious fundamentalists on one side and the secular humanist on the other. Kerry's a Roman Catholic. I don't think he will get as much mileage out of that as John F. Kennedy did in the 1960 election, because the Catholic hierarchy under this pope has turned very conservative. Abortion is their big issue, and now gay marriage is their big issue. Being against those two liberalizing Southern social trends will, I think, make it harder for Kerry to win the votes of Roman Catholics.
To Watertown, Massachusetts. Jennifer, you're with us now. What do you think, Jennifer?
Hi. I'm a transplant. I've actually lived here in Massachusetts for about 10 years, and Manhattan 2 years before that, but I'm originally from Utah. And I think that your guests are kind of missing the boat, particularly more recently. I guess what you're saying made more sense. But to me, it's not an issue of guns or war or shooting bucks. I think that actually doesn't matter to most of America, at least a lot of the people that maybe begrudgingly voted for George Bush. I think a lot of it is social issues. And I guess my question would be, does Kerry have what it would take to appeal to a vast quantity of Americans that voted for George Bush on social issues? Particularly, I would say, considering something like gay marriage, he's going to be tainted with that, with what the Massachusetts Supreme Court did.
Even though he's already said that he's against it.
I think people are going to be highly suspicious of that. And he's going to have to come out and show a very specific way that he truly is kind of on their side with that issue. Because I think there are a lot of Americans that are uncomfortable with the way George Bush is handling things. But if they're going to lose their social definitions, or they're going to have them defined by George Bush, they're probably closer to George Bush's way of thinking of things than maybe the New England, quote, liberal.
I'm not sure.
Well, Kerry said an interesting thing, and I think the caller's assumption is correct, that Bush will have an advantage on social issues, particularly in broad swaths of the country. But Kerry said the other day, and maybe Jack caught this too, he said, I have the same position on gay marriage and civil unions as Dick Cheney, who has a gay daughter. And Cheney has said in the past, I just leave it up to the states, you know, don't get me in this fight. And I think there is a potential backlash to the people pushing the constitutional amendment. But I think in general, I would agree with what the caller says. Bush will have more traction on social issues than Kerry will.
You're listening to The Connection from National Public Radio. Jack, what do you think? Is that a lock for the president?
I think what's interesting is that, you know, the gay issue is going to help him the most with his base. It's going to help him carry Alabama and Mississippi. So it's not like this is a...
he's going to carry them anyway, though, right?
Yeah, he's going to carry them anyway. So the question for the Republicans, and the reason that you haven't seen W come out with this wholehearted embrace of the constitutional amendment yet, is that they're worried about creating a backlash among not just gay voters and liberal voters, but also just, you know, good-hearted Americans who don't like to see one minority group picked on. And, you know, one of the gay rights organizers said to me, this would be the first time that, I'm not sure that he's accurate, but this would be the first time that the American Constitution is amended to deprive Americans of rights. And so I think they're going to run into more of an obstacle than they think, and they know it, which is why they're being so very careful about this right now. Or maybe they're just, you know, maybe they know it. They think they can get away with it, and they're just saving it. But I think that there is a potential there for it to turn around and bite them.
One of the things that we talked about earlier in the program is something I'd like to come back to now, though, and that is whether or not you actually need to have the facts in hand to make a political case in an election. One of the edge that we know the Republicans will have in this election, David, is an enormous war chest that will probably be difficult for the Democrats to rival, which you could use to make the argument that it doesn't really matter who says what. It's going to be the Republicans who get to set the agenda, and if they want to paint this character, Kerry, assuming he wins the nomination, as the Massachusetts liberal, they've in fact got the cash to make that stick regardless of where the truth lies.
Defining your opponent is always one of the most effective tools that you can have. And when you're an incumbent and you have control of the bully pulpit and the war machine and everything else, and you can go to any military base and have cheering soldiers as a backdrop and big flags and so forth, there's no question that Bush will have an advantage there. He's up against two big problems: the conduct of the war, which has now been essentially discredited, and the economy, which is not recovering as quickly, thanks to his tax cuts, as he had hoped it would. And there's no question that with $99 million still in hand, Bush can do a lot to define Kerry. But we saw in the last 2 weeks the first evidence that this White House has been shaken. Karl Rove sent Bush to New Hampshire after the Democrats voted there and Kerry won there, and he sent Bush to South Carolina, home of Bob Jones University. I have to remind one of our callers.
And he invited Tim Russert in for an hour as well.
And then they sat down for Russert, who I thought gave a very respectful but thorough airing of good, tough questions to Bush. And I thought Bush did quite well, actually. But the problem is Bush's numbers are going down. He's trying to stem the slide. And you can have any amount of money. When you're sliding, you can't be defining the other guy. So I look for Bush to bottom out in this temporary dip. To start going after Kerry and using his surrogates in the Fox network. I got a list of them here. These are the people who, and let me see if Jack agrees with it. The people who will be taking out after Kerry: religious fundamentalists, corporate lobbyists, the NRA, the Catholic hierarchy, I predict, anti-tax and anti-government lobbyists, Fox and the Wall Street Journal and talk show people, yourself notwithstanding, and the oil, gas, coal, mining, agribusiness people. And Kerry's got a field of fire. He can go after them on mad cow disease and selling downer cattle. That was basically conservative Republican cattlemen foisting bad meat on the American food
but
process.
But let's get to Jack on this point, because one of the points that the president made in his interview on Meet the Press yesterday, Jack, is that the campaign hasn't, quote, started yet. He kept sort of looking at Russert and saying, you know, when this conversation begins, I'll be quite happy to engage. I mean, the safeties aren't even off yet. Do we know what we're in for?
Oh, I think that almost anybody will tell you that this is going to be a nasty, tight, and perhaps dirty election. One thing that I think that, you know, we tend to overlook in the $99 million is that the Democrats are furtively setting up these political action groups that are going to continue to collect soft money, and although they won't say John Kerry's name and maybe they won't say a candidate's name, they're going to be out there pounding the Republicans with billions of dollars given by rich, wealthy billionaires like George Soros and others. So it's not going to be, you know,
my kind of George,
poor plucky you know, John Kerry being you know, beaten up by the evil Bush crowd. I mean, this is the Republicans are very respectful of the fact that this is a Democratic Party that outpolled them in the popular vote 4 years ago. And they don't go into this with illusions that this is some sort of pushover group that they're easily going to brush aside with $99 million.
Jack, good to have you on the program. Thanks for your time.
Thanks.
Jack Farrell, Washington Bureau Chief, columnist for the Denver Post. David Nye, nice to have you here with me in Boston.
Okay, Dick, thanks.
David's political analyst and syndicated columnist. You're welcome, Connection listeners, to continue the conversation in our online forums. We are at theconnection.org. Our program is produced by Catherine Fenollosa, Sarah Field, Kelly Jones, Arete Karitsky-Fox, Jen Mattson, Christina Russo, and Doug Sugarts. Tara Murphy's our senior producer. I'm Dick Gordon. This is The Connection.
Support for NPR comes from